Welcome to the Pendulum Insight Podcast. This is a show for deal makers in the blockchain business, where we meet the players who are changing the game today and get their insight into everything from the red tape to the raise. This is your host, Colton Moffitt. Let's get started. Hey everybody, we have Alexi Lane from Everex. So Alexi is the founder of Everex, and he's actually got a really interesting background that he's going to tell you more about. But we're going to get right into it and let him describe Everex, which is a blockchain-powered cross-border money transfers and currency exchange. Alexi, just tell us something about yourself and how you came to launch Everex.
Sure. Thank you for having me. Yes, my name is Alexi. I'm CEO and founder of Everex, and we are the blockchain developing company focusing on building the blockchain payment infrastructure using the stablecoins. We're focusing on non-cryptocurrency use cases, such as cross-border money transfer, currency exchange, merchant payments, lending, so pretty much like traditional financial services, but using the blockchain payment technology for its facilitation. Mm-hmm. Personally, I came from the capital markets background. I also have over 8 years of payment processing system background. So basically, coming from commercial banking, capital markets, and payment system, kind of from the financial world, I have this knowledge and experience from like legacy payment and legacy financial market system. And then when the blockchain came about, it was obvious that we should use this old baggage, old experience, expertise, and connect it with this new technology and basically see what happens.
Good. So I saw that you had, you know, already some good examples of it working. And you know, first I want to get into why you chose to focus on international money transfer and the benefits that that has versus some of the other things that you could have done given your experience and blockchain technology.
Right. Well, Bonnie, in cross-border money transfer is I believe the biggest problem right now that we have. Like, because if we're talking about domestic payment, like one country, one currency, even the in the like least developed countries, it's not a problem. Like look at them, M-Pesa in Kenya, look at all the domestic wallets. It's easy. I mean, it's really not a brainer. But once you start, once the like SME or personal individual want to move the money across border for any reason, whether it's the remittance back home from migrant workers or small, medium-sized businesses trying to buy some goods for trade, or just personal remittance, it's always the problems. The banks are dominating, it's time, it's everything. So it's really the slow speed of transaction actually slows down the world economy, and it's been proven. It's not me saying that. So the more money hang out in the air, the more the economy loses. So
right,
basically that's an important and miraculously, the blockchain actually solves just that, because we're talking about settlements like instant. And that's why I'm always puzzled when I'm talking to bankers and they always say like, how you solve the settlement problem? And I'm just like, what settlement? Like, you mean the 30 seconds that takes the block for Ethereum to close? I mean, I'm not sure that's a problem. Okay, because for them, it is a problem. They have these parameters like T+1, T+2, and 3, because the settlement takes time, and it's lost revenues. So that's why I believe that the blockchain technology and payment part of this technology is the best implemented for specifically the cross-border payments. But it's more than just payments, since we're on the subject. Mm-hmm. Because look, if we're talking about the world remittance, it's the official number. It's about World Bank says it's $600 billion. If you add all the black market, the informal agent market, I believe it surpasses the $1 trillion a year. However, all of this is cash. It means that on ramp and off ramp is still cash. And if the money is sent to least developed countries, like the Philippines, for example, or any Asia, and the recipient gets cash, from one side, it's great, really, because it really this money helps people to survive. However, it doesn't solve so-called financial inclusion problem, because it doesn't create the credit history. You can't spend this money online. You don't know, like this just cash in the hand is untraceable, meaning so this person still have no access to credit.
Right.
If we put the same process on a blockchain and have a record, yeah, maybe this person receives, you know, $200 a month. It's not much, but she gets it every month, meaning she has a stable income that could possibly open her a small line of credit or help this person open a small store, even if she sells the fruits on the street. But, you know, she can maybe use the app and collect some of the payments electronically, which creates a record, which is a good thing. So that's where I believe what we do kind of expanding beyond just the space.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned a lot of those issues, and you mentioned the Philippines. I'm actually in the Philippines right now, in Manila. And
oh, fantastic.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing how quickly the city is growing. And at the same time, the issues that you talked about affect so many people. So if they're working online, they're accessing income in a more convenient way, in a way that is more competitive, there's still a lot of them having trouble even opening a bank account. It's more difficult than
to
do it. And so if they get something by PayPal, a lot of them are using services called a PayPal and Casher, where someone they're just supposed to trust some reviews on Facebook and some screenshots, receives their money, and then gives them cash for it. And this is sketchy, right? You don't get a history, like you said, there, even if you're able to get to
it. Exactly.
And then the other unfortunate thing is the use of kind of a predatory lending, the sort of like little local loan sharks. So you have these small businesses, like you mentioned, they could be selling something basically on the street, and they take money, sort of like a cash advance situation.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who's given them a loan just has their debit card and goes and gets their money out of their ATM.
Oh, really? Like even like that? So they are banks. So nevertheless, means that those people are banks, but banks refuse to give them credit, although they could, because simply, I know the banks in Asia are super conservative. They don't give you anything unless you pledge like your house or your car as a collateral, right? But those loan sharks, but they charge. They know the interest they charge.
I don't actually off the top of my head.
I can tell you.
It's not good.
It's 1% per day. That's the best. I heard even cases of 2. So this is not right. I mean, to put it kindly. All right. So, and that's we believe where we can help, because if we have this credit history on a blockchain, that maybe not banks still, but maybe some licensed financial services, who specialize on the microfinancing. A lot of global, we know there's a funds, you know, who's like a non-NGOs who specialize in the microfinancing. They will have this enough data to do some kind of basic lending on underwriting and issue the same loan, but charge much less than daily 1% a day. So this is also one of the part of our work.
Yeah, it's definitely such a necessary thing. There are some really fascinating startups here, but all across the region. And what you're doing, of course, it's not just in Thailand. And so I would like to actually talk about what you accomplished all the way back in 2016, which in this industry, in this space, seems like light years ago. So tell us about that. 850,000 baht from migrant workers in Thailand back home to Myanmar. How did that go?
Right. That was our first pilot, and there was a first non-cryptocurrency use case of cross-border money transfer recorded on the blockchain. And actually, it's all on the blockchain. For those who are interested, we also have a product called fplur.io. It's the competitor for Etherscan that it's a blockchain monitoring and the block explorer. So basically you can roll back to August 2016 and see all those transactions that's been done. So I believe we had like 6 weeks of this pilot. We served about 100 families. Yeah. And basically, right, so what happened is there was, like I said, it was a test case. So workers exchanged their cash to what's now called stablecoin, which is a Thai baht on blockchain. And they sent this Thai baht to their families, who cashed it out with the local partner, who exchanged Thai baht for local currency. It's called JAD in Myanmar. And then the same Thai baht he sold at this little spread to those who need to pay for goods and then services in Thailand. Mm-hmm. And this way, the same electronic Thai baht, aka stablecoin, returned back to Thailand, and we could roll it again. So at that time, we only had 100,000 baht issued on the blockchain. But if you look at the transaction, each Thai baht rolled over 8 times in the loop, because the volume was 850,000 plus something. But we only had 100,000 issued. So that's how it worked. And that gave us sort of like confidence that this project, that we can launch it on a larger scale, because it works. The people like it. It's really good service, because alternatively, they had to use the informal agent system, which gives no receipt. You just don't know. You just basically have to trust this person. You give him cash, tell him, please send it to my mom. He says, okay. And, you know, you may never see him tomorrow. Right. Or ever again, because there is no trace, no receipt that you ever gave this money to this person. However, this system is still, this system called the Hawala, or aka a Hundi, this system is older than the banking system, and it's built on trust. So it still works. Mm-hmm. So it's a serious competitor, to be honest with you.
That's interesting. I know that the use of that system by certain communities in the United States following 9/11 became the subject of a lot of scrutiny, but it was always fascinating. You know, it was fascinating. And I bring that up because there is this sort of philosophical debate or divide within the whole blockchain space, which is very anti-authority, anti-regulation, everything completely what some would criticize and say Wild West, versus another side that says, let's court the approval and the relationships with banks and with governments and make everything go that way. Where do you think is the reasonable middle ground and the way that you've chosen to work with banks and governments, for instance?
We believe the reasonable ground is when the activity touches the national currencies, there should be completely a regulated space. So let's say if I convert my Bitcoin to dollars or euros, basically, yes, I have to follow the guidelines and there must be a KYC, AML. But if I deal only with crypto, in my opinion, it's a decentralized world. So this should be outside of the regulation. But again, I'm not the regulator. I work with the regulators. And it's still, I would say, kind of way to go in terms of the education of them, because we still don't have exact clear picture on this. So I believe market will figure it out. I mean, there's lots of interest at stake. So it's definitely the middle ground. So.
Sure. So in October, you joined the Enterprise Ethereum Alliance. Why don't you just get into what that means for Everex and why you chose their financial services special interest group in particular?
Sure. Well, EEA is one of the leading wisdom of the blockchain entrepreneurship ecosystem. And actually, we should have done it earlier. We should have joined earlier. Just didn't have time. We were super busy with business dev. But obviously, EEA comprises of the super clear minds, bright minds. And I sometimes listen and participating in the webinars. Basically, the amount of knowledge that exchanged during these sessions is stunning. Just like you, because you have, sometimes we can have over 100 people on the webinar, and there's like maybe 5 or 4 per presentation at the same time. So you're really learning about different projects and different approaches. So this is really like your university, in a sense, for entrepreneur. So any entrepreneur who's developing his company, I mean project on Ethereum, I believe must join the EEA.
Good to know. So if you could just kind of pick one that comes to mind right away, what would you say is the most interesting thing you've learned from being involved so far?
Well, I would say it's a network. It's basically, it's not about the some particular knowledge, but to learn what different projects are doing and who represents them and how, what level of development they are, and like clicking, okay, maybe I should talk to them, or maybe we should collaborate, or maybe not. So this is mostly for me, in particular, like a networking case. Gotcha. And learning also, and the learning as well.
Yeah, so there's a built-in validation and due diligence element. So you're all in the same organization. You are able to see what they're all about, and that saves you some of the mystery of, like you say, clicking around on random logos and links online and not really.
Right, right. Okay. You just know that those companies actually support Ethereum, and they also building their solution on Ethereum like us. So it's obvious that we should learn from each other and see what's everyone's doing.
Gotcha. So it's a built-in trust and credibility. That's right. Good. You know, we're also focused on partnership development, and I see that that's been crucial for you as well. So could you please tell us more about your partnership with Shwe Bank in Myanmar and the strategic significance it represents for you?
Sure. Shwe Bank is the first partner we sign up in the Myanmar. Basically, the way we develop the system is that we plan to have each strategic banking partner in each market. Market means country. And this bank will take care of the legal, the licensing part, and the underwriting of the stable token that we use in our business, while we, as DevRex, we are a service provider. So we are responsible for technical solution, the platform, user adoption, and so forth. So we're kind of separating the liabilities in this case. So Myanmar, as you know, is the emerging market country. The sanctions just been lifted in 2012. Mm-hmm. So it's rapidly developing. Country still in kind of, I wouldn't say it's a quiet place, because they sometimes have some conflicts here or there. However, in terms of business, it creates a certain opportunity, because, for example, in Myanmar, over 5 million migrant workers from Myanmar legally live and work, and they're sending the remittance back home. So we're talking about quite large amount, I would say, good 9-digit market volume per month. Yes. Okay. Good, I mean, like middle 9-digit market. That's just, and 90-something% of it goes completely underground. Nobody, it's just, even governments just say, look, we don't want to tax it. Just tell us how much, because that's our part of our GDP. So we don't even know how much money coming in and coming out. Just at least tell us that. And that's where the blockchain comes in, because everything is on a blockchain. You know exactly at any time of moment how much money moved, how much money stayed, and so forth. So the Shwe Bank takes care of the distribution part in Myanmar. And our local Thai bank, the name of which I hope to release very soon, because we are about to sign 3-side partnership. Basically takes care of the Thai side. So it's like 3-side partnership between Avrex, Shwe Bank, and our Thai partner bank, supervised by the Central Bank of Thailand, BOT, a bank of Thailand, to launch this project. And we're looking for that, knock on wood, in March. So by the end of Q1.
Good. So that's developing soon. And would you mind just kind of exploring the idea of comparing what it's like to develop these partnerships in Southeast Asia, in Myanmar and Thailand, versus maybe other places that you've worked?
Good question. I believe it's kind of difficult, because when you deal with banks, the mindset is not, it doesn't match the, or rather say the risk exposure doesn't match the entrepreneurship risk exposure. So we, like entrepreneurs, the startup founders, we tend to take a risk. Mm-hmm. Banks have a lot of baggage on their shoulders, so they are not that risky. Right. And finding this compromise that would be completely like within the regulatory framework, which may or may not be even ready for this specific product because they don't know it. Nobody ever done it.
Right.
And the regulator, like you can talk to regulators who work, who wants to do everything by the book, but this book were written in 1960, which was before the internet. Yeah. And there's just not, and the word blockchain just not in there. And how you're supposed to do it. So it's, I would say it's been quite challenging. But hopefully, with the launch of this, we will set up the example, and we will create this like first mover advantage in a way, and that will make us easier to will help us to talk to next countries, next markets easier.
Good. So, you know, and you've had this successful test case in the past, you know, 2016, you've developed since then, formed a partnership with Sway Bank, and you've got this other one coming up. So it seems like you may be well positioned to do that. And it's obviously an uncertain environment. So as you mentioned, you're taking a lot of risks, but you obviously feel that it's worthwhile. So in the rest of the year coming up, what kind of partnerships do you see being most valuable to build on this progress? And what would that model look like? What benefits would it offer everybody involved?
Right. We're basically looking to work with licensed financial service providers, basically in US, it's called a MSB license holder, money service business. In Asia and the Middle East, it's the money exchangers or money remittance companies. So those who are licensed and have basically have a business, have customer base, but may not have the technology or their technology is not exactly up to date. So we can offer and partner with them. So like basically providing the partnership in a way of technology and helping them to reach more efficient and cost saving model in their business. That would be probably the, our goal to build those partnerships.
Okay. And for the people that are listening, could you give an example of one, not necessarily that you want to work with a specific one, but just name a brand?
Oh, actually, those are small one. I'm not sure any one of them actually know. But if you travel in the Middle East or in Asia, you see those exchangers everywhere, pretty much. They deal predominantly with cash. But they are licensed and they are regulated, and the regulations changed, which may allow them to actually deal with electronic money. That's where we come in. So so this is not, we're not talking about brands like MoneyGram or Western Union. No, those guys are too big. They have all the business. So we basically looking for partners like in our level. So who also like in the small, medium sized business space who wants to make a difference, because that's how you build the traction. Once the traction is built, then it's time to scale up. And then we can talk to banks more. We can talk to big guys. So that's what, because we still need to prove how this actually works. We're still on the launching phase.
So it would be maybe groups that own a lot of those little, the actual kiosks you walk up to and you change out your money and send a transfer.
Right. Yeah. But mind you, those kiosks are usually like a chain. So they own by one company. Right. And basically, we want to talk to that company. Right. And using their network, agent network as a distribution network. Because the markets we work with in is still it's highly unbanked. At best, underbanked. Right. So they're still cash, heavily cash-based. And what we offer is something like, it's not a bank account, but it's the wallet. Which allows you to keep the same cash and you can actually transfer it peer-to-peer to each other, just scanning the QR code, and it's on the blockchain and it's immutable and it's public and transparent. So it's definitely a value there. So, and the process of opening the wallet is easier than to go into the bank and staying in a line and talk to the officer, etc. But when you need more, like a bigger like another product, like maybe insurance or lend a loan, then the banks can join the network and actually provide the service as well. Because we are not, we don't position ourselves as a service provider, as a financial service provider. We position ourselves as a technical service provider, bringing a financial service provider to the network so they can offer their services.
Gotcha. So this is definitely a thing where you're not in competition with these traditional financial service providers. You're enabling them and hoping to
right.
educate and connect them quickly.
That's the good point. We don't want to compete with them. We want to work with them.
Great.
That's because I just don't see the point of building the competition for them while we can just sell our technology and benefit altogether.
Sure. Sure. And, you know, it's and I hate to be this guy, but if you compare it to, say, Uber or something, they didn't go and build a bunch of cars, custom design cars. They didn't
right.
recreate the road system, add a technology to make it more efficient. So, you know, I appreciate the time you've taken to explain how this works and how
sure.
your partnership should be laid out and what you're looking for. Now, for the people that are listening, and they're looking for voices and insight they can trust. Is there anyone in the blockchain space that you hold in such high regard you'd recommend them without hesitation?
Yes, sure. Well, the guy who actually brought me into the blockchain is Charles Hoskinson. I always listen to his podcast. I think he's one of the biggest influencers in the blockchain world. He's the leader of Cardano blockchain. So I have a high regard for Charles. Also like the work that BlockGeek team does, Amir Rosic especially. You can find them at bloggeeks.com. And I also listen in the morning, CryptZero, the YouTuber, Omar CryptZero. He has a great coverage. So every morning it's like my news coverage from the world of crypto.
Excellent. Well, you know, I appreciate that. It's definitely an interesting space. There's a lot of new brands that haven't had time to build a huge reputation. There's a lot of, unfortunately, scammers that are good at PR. And so I like to get directly from people who know who they're listening to and who can be trusted, at least to a degree. So that being said, any final words of wisdom you'd like to share with everyone listening right now?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be on your podcast. I would also add that we are still, I hear like people saying it's all over, the crypto is dead. I believe we haven't even started. So this is very early stage and there's still a lot of ways for adoption, the user adoptions, the technology is proven. So technology is here to stay. What will happen with the market? We'll see, but I highly encourage the listeners who are new to this or just started learning, keep learning, keep educating. There's lots of stuff online, and see maybe you can apply your skills, your talents in this, in learning. There's MIT, I think, started the blockchain courses. There's lots of stuff to do, and we live in a really exciting time, and I'm kind of thankful for this opportunity to catch in this blockchain era so we can find ourselves in it.
It is incredible. And one of the best things about it is that it's happening worldwide and that there are legitimate, gainful, practical projects and companies all over the world. And it's not really centered in any one particular country. So for instance, I'm in the Philippines, you're in Thailand right now. We're talking about companies all over the place. And so if any of these people that are listening, they could be in the US, South America, if they want to connect with you specifically and they're interested in learning more about EverX, where should they go?
Simple way, just start everx.io, and we have links to our Telegram channel, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, pretty much everything, all social media available. We have the Reddit channel is there. So I guess, starting from everx.io would be the start. And also we are popular on the Telegram. We have a large Telegram community. And if you want us to talk with me directly, just tag me in there. And I usually respond.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Alexi Lane, everybody. EverX.io. That's EverX Exchange. We really appreciate your time and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. Good luck.
Thank you for listening to the Pendulum Insight Podcast. If you learned something today and you want to know more, go check out PendulumInsight.com.